Welcome to D-Backs Podcast.
The future.
Technology and stuff.
This is the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Sports, 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 sports.
From the field to the front office, the ballpark to the broadcast booth, it's time to talk D-Backs baseball.
Just think about baseball.
Here are Greg Schulte and a high drive to left. Back she goes. And Steve Berthew.
Look at Chris Owens.
Play ball.
From spectacular Salt River Fields, a talking stick here in Scottsdale, Arizona, this is D-Backs Podcast, the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks. It will be right here, February 20th, when D-Backs pitchers and catchers will have their first official workout. And today, we are on site for Episode 5. We have moved our broadcast headquarters from Chase Field and set up shop here at Salt River Fields as we get ready for spring training. I'm Steve Berthew. Hollywood award season underway, the Golden Globes on Sunday. Leading into the Oscars, George Clooney presented with a Lifetime Achievement Award. If this show had such an award, it would go to the D-backs' longtime play-by-play voice, the Gubna, Greg Schulte.
Wow.
Without question.
That's quite an intro. Thank you.
You and Clooney.
Thank you.
I still think it'll be hard to top last week when you were the Earl of Grantham.
I forgot who I was already.
On Downton Abbey.
You were the Earl of Grantham.
I know.
Yeah. I can't remember who I was because they won an award.
Yeah, they won a Best Supporting Actress for gal married to Mr. Bates, as I'm sure you know.
For the longest time, I thought that was Downton Abbey.
I did too, to be honest with you. I love that show. I'm a big Downton Abbey guy, but that's all right. There were, of course, many other awards at the Golden Globes. Best Supporting Actor in a TV Show, Miniseries, or TV Movie. And I'm sure had he been so nominated, the winner would have been our producer, our engineer, our man about town, Leo Gilmartin.
It's just an honor to be mentioned in that group, and I wasn't nominated, but
that's the real honor just to be nominated.
Who did win that then, by the way?
I don't know.
Too many to know.
It's already forgotten.
The amazing thing, and it kind of ties into the fact that we're doing a podcast here, the amazing thing, and why, you know, I watch the Golden Globes with the wife because she wants to see what everybody's wearing.
The wife.
But every show that wins an award is not even on TV. They're on, you know, Netflix or Amazon or, I mean, it's amazing where the technology has taken us in the way we consume media these days.
And what are we doing here? A podcast.
We're podcasting. Yeah. Best movie you saw in 2014.
Oh, wow. Do I have to count to that? Because I just saw it last night. Was Birdman.
I haven't seen that yet.
Winner.
That's Birdman.
I was going to say that. You went and saw Birdman. Nice job.
Actually,
good
I
job.
Saw, yeah.
Good job, Leo.
I saw it online. But, yeah, I saw Birdman. I saw Whiplash very recently, which was amazing as well. But I'd probably stick with Birdman right now.
I saw Birdman about 2 weeks ago now. Unbelievable.
I got to go with Gone with the Wind.
Gone with the Wind. I don't give a damn.
He's always been a trendsetter.
Yeah.
D-Backs Podcast available for free download on dbacks.com and on iTunes. Episode 5 here. We usually record this show midweek, and the D-Backs have already made headlines this week. It's been busy over here. We'll talk about the latest news in just a moment. And with more answers and details, we'll talk to D-Backs' new Senior Vice President of Baseball Operations, DeJohn Watson. He joins us as a show guest shortly. We'll see what else is going on in baseball this week with Around the League. Our crash course in baseball analytics continues with Sabermetrics Smackdown. We talked WHIP last week. This week, Leo, brace yourself. We will talk FIP.
You've already lost me.
WHIP to FIP.
That's why I went right to you.
You already lost me.
Walk toward the light, Leo.
I'm going to keep my ears open. I'm going to
walk toward the light.
Try and learn something.
Give our listeners a little precursor here what FIP actually is.
I'm going to save that.
Okay.
I want to say that we're going from WHIP to FIP, but I will give you this. We'll tell you why FIP is a very good thing for Randall Delgado. Well, that's a little teaser there for you. The new hit segment that is sweeping the country, Hey Gubna, looks back on the most unexpected of the D-backs' six cycles, and here at Salt River Fields, where the 10th annual D-backs Fantasy Camp is taking place this week, we'll be joined by Fantasy Camp coach and D-back legend Mark Grace, talk about his role in Hillsboro last year and has moved to the Major League staff this season. But, Gub, let's get to the headlines here. And the big one came out on Monday, or on Tuesday, I should say. And we should emphasize that as we record this here midday on Wednesday, this is still not official.
Right.
It's important to point that out, pending a physical. But the Diamondbacks, it was reported, have reached agreement with Cuban pitcher Yoan Lopez, a deal reported to be worth about $8.25 million. which would be a record under MLB's new international guidelines. So they continue, Gub, this new regime, to be very aggressive, especially internationally.
And Lopez decided that the Diamondbacks would be the team he would want to play for, supposedly here, because he's got maybe a faster chance of getting to the major leagues. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'll take a look at him in the spring.
It's a wide-open competition.
Yeah, and, you know, anything can happen. So this kid's got some upside. Saw some video of him. He's got some size on him. He's kind of a tall but skinny.
6'4", yeah. 190. The first thing that came to my mind when I saw the video of Yoan Lopez was Alexi Yagondo, the Rangers pitcher.
Right.
Who's kind of gone back and forth between being a starter and a reliever. Doesn't throw quite as hard as Yagondo does. Agondo's very high 90s. This guy, mid-90s. But physically, I thought the comp was right there. And he's only 21 years old.
Yeah, he throws all the pitches. He's got a fastball that sits, depending upon who you look, listen to, low to mid-90s, somewhere in that neighborhood. So, 21 years old. So, you know, another Cuban player. We're going to see more and more of these signings by Major League clubs, where the Diamondbacks got a head up on everybody else here with Tomas and now Lopez.
It's a complicated process. Lopez defected from Cuba, then had to set up residence in Haiti. He's been in the Dominican holding showcases and workouts for teams, and just, I think it was last week, was cleared by the U.S. government to come over and get the work visa and all that stuff. So you can imagine the paperwork involved here. But that deal, again, as of Wednesday afternoon, still not official. They need to get the physical done. We should see Lopez in big league camp this spring. He's still a little raw. I think because of the level of competition in Cuba's top league, their younger pitchers tend to be a little more polished than American pitchers. They're a little further along. So he is advanced to some degree. But he still figures to need some time in the minor leagues, it seems.
They don't have the low minor leagues like we do in the States over in Cuba. So they get an opportunity to play at a very competitive pace early on when they're young. And I think that will benefit him coming over here to the United States.
And in that league, he's 21, even younger. He's pitched there for 3 years. Yeah. He's playing against guys who are in their 30s.
Yep.
So there is some advancement there in terms of the pitcher. Some very complex details about the Lopez signing, and we'll talk to John Watson about this because he's great on the international stuff. But Dave Stewart said the $8 million that they spent on Lopez actually cost $16
million. Right, I read that.
I tried to figure out a way to explain this briefly, but under the new collective bargaining
briefly,
agreement.
Briefly, said Leo.
I know. Fingers crossed. See, that hurts. That really hurts. But, you know, the international signings for a while was kind of like the Wild West. You could drop in and just write a giant check, and that was it. Well, they wanted to kind of get that under control, so they set up sort of a system that has bonus pool allocation limits.
Kind of a limit,
Yeah, and if you go over your limit, which for the Diamondbacks was about $2.3 million, if you go over that limit, you're taxed. And if you go way over, you're taxed 100%.
Yeah, it's almost like the luxury tax they have in baseball.
Right. But in a sense, if you go far enough over, and the Diamondbacks did that, I mean, imagine their limit is 2.3 for all their players, and they signed one guy for 8.25. So they ended up spending about $10 million or so. These are rough estimate numbers. But about $10 million or so. On everybody. They signed other international free agents as well. So they're about $8 million over their limit, so they're taxed $8 million. So you spend $8 million on Lopez, you get 100% tax on another $8 million, there's your $16
million. Right.
So it gets expensive. Now,
that
they're also
too bad,
limited.
The explanation, by the way.
Thank you. See, how about that?
I followed along.
Something new, a compliment.
And it was quick.
I tried. But the other part of that is they are going to be limited on
the
next two signing
periods. $300,000?
You cannot spend. They'll still have all the money. Because of the record last year, they get allocated, I think, more money than anybody else in baseball. But you can only now spend a maximum of $300,000 on one player. You can sign as many players as you want, but you can't spend more than $300,000 on any one guy, which means they can now get outbid by anybody they want.
And one more thing on Lopez before we go to another topic here. Dave Stewart said it's almost like getting another first-round pick.
To go along with Tuki Toussaint.
Right.
Yeah. And they're very similar, apparently, too, in makeup and stuff, which is why people are so excited. Mm-hmm. So they continue to be aggressive there. We'll talk more about Lopez with DeJohn Watson coming up shortly. The other thing that has everybody buzzing this week, Fox Sports' Ken Rosenthal reported on Twitter, it was late Monday night, that the Diamondbacks, and again, this is all reporting and rumor, that the Diamondbacks are in the mix for free agent pitcher James Shields. And this was the first time all offseason That's why kind of why everybody perked up that Shields' name was linked to a specific team. His market after John Lester signed with the Cubs has been kind of ambiguous and a little murky. You haven't really seen Shields connected, Gubb, to one specific team. Suddenly, you know, I've got Ken Rosenthal, great credibility, right, a great reporter, saying, hey, it's the Diamondbacks.
And the only thing we really had heard on Shields was supposedly he had turned down, what was the figure, 110?
That's the thing, 110 for 5 years
because
from one
he didn't
team.
Want to play for that team.
That's what not only Ken Rosenthal but John Paul Morosi had reported as well, that he did not want to go to the team that offered him 110 for five. Nick Cafardo had something about that as well in the Boston Globe, his Sunday baseball column, which is always a great read.
Bert, I think the thing with Shields, if you look at him, at his age, right, what, is 32 going on 33?
He will be – he turned 33 in December.
In December. So he,
this is going to be his age 33 season.
If you look at him, 200 innings in the last, what, eight seasons? 200 plus?
He has pitched at least 200 innings in a season for the last 8 years in a row.
Okay. It's a lot of innings, number one. You wonder when it's going to start breaking down, but he's really shown no signs of that. I mean, he's not a real big power pitcher. You know, he'll get his fair share of strikeouts. But I think the Diamondbacks are looking as he would come in, serve as – take over the number one spot, obviously, in the rotation.
Yes.
But he would serve as a mentor for the younger kids in the organization that are – coming up and, you know, maybe on that pitching staff.
And there's a lot of them.
And fill in the time until some of these other younger kids, the Diamondbacks got from the Cubs, the Montero deal, a Robbie Ray who may be a year or two out or maybe even crack the rotation this year, you don't know. But some of these other young kids that they piece together in trades, a guy like Shields could come in, mentor the guys on the current staff, the younger guys, and then – fill in the gap until these other pitchers are ready to come into the major leagues.
Jack Magruder at Fox Sports Arizona quoted D-backs GM Dave Stewart this week as saying that Shields would, quote, be a good fit here in Arizona, and added that Shields has the ability to lead a staff. As you mentioned, that's something that's important. And that's when, you know, Dave Stewart kind of got hammered on Twitter for saying that Diamondbacks operate a little differently than teams that really focus on analytics. But that there is something to be said for that old-school mentality, and Dave Stewart and Tony La Russa and Dave Duncan and Mike Harkey and Mike Fetters, all these guys here know that it makes a difference to have a staff of young kids have somebody to look at and look to.
Absolutely. And I really think that those who know Dave Stewart knew what he was talking about.
Right.
But, you know, if you want to take it a little further, which a lot of people did,
well,
they're going to have their fun with it.
Anytime you say anything like that,
yes,
Twitter just goes bananas.
Oh, yeah. Bonkers.
You push the buttons there.
Yep.
Here's the thing. Ken Rosenthal reported that the fact that Diamondbacks were in the mix for Shields was a strong indication that the market for him now is not going to be at $100 million, $110 million. It's going to be more like somewhere between $80 to $95 million. And that's when the Diamondbacks feel comfortable, apparently, getting involved. But that means other teams might as well. So if the number's going to come down from 110 to, say, 90, then more teams are going to go, maybe we do want to sign James Shields. It's going to sort of give him a little more flexibility in terms of the offers.
You think he'll sign before Scherzer, or Scherzer will sign before he will?
I think we're going to wake up one day and Scherzer's going to be done out of nowhere, and it might be the Cardinals.
It could be tomorrow, too. I mean, everything's been really hush-hush.
But
what is that? Well, he's a Missouri guy, so grew up in St. Louis.
Yeah, Max Scherzer. Yeah. And they kind of feel the need to make a move, but they're going to get expensive, too. They've got to pay Lance Lynn, and they're going to have to pay Waka soon. That team's going to start
to get pricey. And I still do. I don't discount pricey. Discount Detroit getting involved in this yet.
I don't understand why they don't go get a bullpen. It's cost them. I don't know how many postseason series, and they just simply refuse to acknowledge
it.
I don't get it. But, you know, we're here at Salt River Fields. We're basically a month away from pitchers and catchers reporting. And Shields hasn't signed. Scherzer hasn't signed. They got to get this thing. These guys are running out of time.
Right.
They got to lock this down here in the next week or so.
Seems like every year you get one or two players that drift into mid to late January before they finally sign their contract. But then, you know, it kind of catapults from there. But those are the two big names right now that I look at on the pitching side. That, you know, once they fall into place and everybody goes to spring training, see what they've got, see what they need, and go from there.
They're still out there. Dave Stewart quoted Tuesday as saying he has spoken to Shields' agent multiple times to work on groundwork that might lead to a deal, so we'll see where that goes. The other news that we want to hit on here, another comment from Dave Stewart, this I read yesterday, that they have decided they are not going to go out and trade for a veteran catcher. They are going to go this year with what they have.
And you and I talked before we went on the air. We both like that. I have no problem with that.
I think it's terrific. They have been widely reported to be in search of a veteran guy since trading Miguel Montero, the name that Dave Stewart mentioned on this show, in fact, Deanna Navarro. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the asking price from Toronto has been too high. Wellington Castillo of the Cubs was another name floating around out there. The general thinking has been the Diamondbacks would go get a guy on a one-year deal or so. In a sense, rent a guy for a year until the younger guys are ready. Now that has changed. Dave Stewart says this week the Diamondbacks are, quote, not going to pursue another catcher because you've got the combination of the inflated market for the veteran catchers you might acquire and the encouraging progression of Peter O'Brien.
Right.
And Dave Stewart mentioned Peter specifically, that he, in consultation with his staff and his coaches, they have all decided that this guy is close. And what do I know? But from what I've seen, and I saw a lot of him in the fall league, he is close. And the idea, frankly, that he can't catch, I think, is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it was Dave Stewart. It was either Stu or Tony that told us that probably going to start the year double A to work with the young pitchers down there, Bradley, Shipley, and
Blair. Yeah.
And Blair. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean he couldn't be called. Diamondbacks called up. A lot of teams called up players from double A. The thing is to get the work in. And I think another thing we're looking at here, and it's been quoted, and I think it might have been Stu, who said that the Diamondbacks, if their offense is what they think it could be, they could maybe afford to give up a little offense at that catcher position to be strong defensively. And I think Tuffy is strong defensively.
Very strong.
We hear nothing but rave reviews on the Rule 5 pickup.
Oscar Hernandez.
So, you know, you've got those two right there. And if O'Brien is close, why go out and get a guy for a year and maybe have to give up somebody you really don't want to give up, because teams know the Diamondbacks are looking at catching. And they're going to want, you know, a top-line pitcher or a good infielder or one of the outfielders. I'd rather keep the guys.
Yeah, so they're trying to drive up the price.
Yes.
And the Diamondbacks, I think wisely, have stepped back and said, you know what, never mind.
Let's take a closer look at this.
We've had Tony La Russa on this show. We've had Dave Stewart on this show. We know how they both value a defensive catcher.
Remember what Tony said about Dave Duncan? A guy that can catch and call a game. Right, and Dave Duncan's rapport with the catchers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was very responsible for what Yadier Molina has done over his career.
I read this quote from Dave Stewart, and I found it very encouraging. It was in another Jack Magruder column this week on FoxSportsArizona.com. This from Dave Stewart. Talking to our staff, they have given us a clear indication that they believe Peter O'Brien is going to be ready sooner rather than later. What it would cost us to make a deal, we believe we will stay with what we have. We're going to start with what we have and stay that way until O'Brien is here. That was really encouraging.
The one thing we can say, we know Tuffy's going to work his butt off, his rear end off. He's got a chance to be, you know, the number one catcher. I think it depends upon what they see out of the kid here in spring training and maybe what they see out of O'Brien here in spring training. You know, O'Brien's going to get some calls in spring training.
Look, I've said this before on this show. I watched a lot of him in the fall league. I watched him throw out three attempted base dealers in one game in Glendale. I watched him hit two absolute bombs for home runs.
You talked to Glenn Sherlock,
surprise.
Too, right?
I sat in the seats right behind home plate with Glenn Sherlock and watched him catch. I sat with Mike Harkey and watched him catch. I sat with Gebby and watched him catch. I sat with DeJohn and Dave Stewart and watched him catch. Dave McKay at the fall league championship game, because Salt River, the Rafters, the team that plays here, the team that had the Diamondback players, won the fall league this year. And I sat with Dave McKay and Ed Lewis at that game. And Dave McKay went out of his way to tell me, because usually I'm the annoying nudge asking these guys a million questions. But Dave, unsolicited, said, you know what? I am really impressed with Peter O'Brien behind the plate defensively. Now, he's not Yadier Molina and likely won't ever be. But the idea that he can't catch or he can't be a catcher, you got to move him to first base, you got to move to the outfield, it's just incorrect at this point. I think, and based on these quotes from Dave, they are very encouraged with what they've seen defensively. Because the kid is, I can tell you this for sure, the kid has worked his butt off.
And talk about encourage. We're going to encourage the fans. Come on out to Salt River Fields. Watch the spring training games, because there are going to be a lot of battles going on.
And see for yourself.
Yeah.
That's so much of the stuff is based on what we read, yeah, because it's hard to find the video, yeah, of these guys.
Put your eye to the what's going on in the field, and you'll be the determining factor. For.
Don't forget the one other determining factor in this whole catching equation is that because Oscar Hernandez, keep in mind, who was 21 years old and hit 240 in A-ball last year, because he was a Rule 5 pick, has to be on the 25-man roster all year. That makes this situation a little more complicated.
Well, it does, and a lot of times when you draft a player like that, you can still work out a trade. But everything we have heard is Tampa Bay didn't really want to lose him.
They called and tried to get him back.
So what I'm saying is it's not a necessity. I mean, if the Diamondbacks don't feel like he's ready and would take up a roster spot, they would have to offer him back to Tampa Bay, which I think would give the Diamondbacks $25,000 back, something
like
that. Yeah,
you pay $50,000 to draft him, you get $25,000 back if you lose him.
But they would have the first right to have him back. A lot of times, and the Diamondbacks have done this, they'll make a trade to keep a Rule 5 player, meaning that, you know, they don't lose him, but they could then send him down to the minor leagues. But everything we've heard from Tampa Bay, if he's offered back, they'd probably take him back in a heartbeat.
Well, they figured no team is going to keep a 21-year-old kid who had 240 in A-ball on its big league roster all year long. We don't need to protect this kid. Well, surprise.
And especially after trading their number one catcher, which the Diamondbacks had done a few days earlier, in Miguel Montero. Yep. In those winter meetings.
So they're going to stick with the kids behind the plate. That's going to be interesting. Let's get to our first guest because, as we've just discussed, we have a lot to talk about.
All right, friends, it is time.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you welcome one of the magnificent figures?
He's so good.
My guest.
It's always a pleasure when our guest drops by.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions, and I want to have them answered immediately.
A third-round draft pick by the Royals. 1985 out of West Los Angeles College, once hit a very solid 240 for Appleton in the Midwest League.
Appleton.
Deshaun Watson.
Hey now, how you doing?
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You have been – I looked at the resume. I can see why you got hired. It was obvious the day you were introduced, but, boy, a player, scout, executive, Marlins, Reds, Indians, 8 seasons in the Dodgers system last two, running all their player development. Uh-huh. And now here in Arizona with GM Dave Stewart driving a new D-backs front office that has been among the busiest of the major leagues this offseason, our senior vice president of baseball operations. Just to give folks an idea of how busy you are, since the day you were introduced, which I think was the last weekend of the season, right?
Yeah.
How many times have you been to the Dominican Republic?
3.
Wow. And anywhere else?
Yeah, I've been to Veracruz, Mexico. Goodness. On my way to Costa Rica, possibly here in another 5 days.
Have you been home?
Just for, you know, change out clothes, man. Just to change out clothes. My kids are like, "Who are you?" when you walk in the door. Why are you in our house, gentlemen?
I bet. I mean, how hard is that?
It's been fun, man. It's not hard. This is what we do. This is what we signed up for. And you know, for myself, I'm extremely passionate about baseball, and having the opportunity to work with some great guys. And I know where our focus is really driven. We're trying to impact this organization by finding the best players that we can, you know, that fit in our kind of mold and our mindset of who they are and how they go about their business. So it's been fun, man, and just trying to – again, I'm getting to know all of our scouts on the amateur side, getting to know all of our professional scouts, getting to know all of our international guys, Latin America, Asia. And it's a huge pool of people that you're trying to get to understand.
And that's what fans almost don't know about or know is there. It's because it's all under the surface stuff. The network of people involved in just one organization is staggering.
Oh, man, it's crazy. Again, you look at the player development side alone, you have – goodness, we're going to have 4 coaches at almost every level this year. So I've met some of the coaches during instructional league, but I haven't met all of the coaches yet. So I can't wait to get the spring training to spend some time with our coaching staff to really understand what our overall core philosophy is and beliefs on hitting, pitching, base running, outfield play, and what are some of the things we're looking for. Having spent some time with Tony, listened to him talk about, you know, how you manage pressure and making it your friend and understand how we're going to apply that to our young players coming into the organization, such a big piece for me. You know, spending time listening to Tony talk to Chip and work with Chip on trying to educate him on what he can take from his experiences and pass along and you know, introduce to our players that are coming into this championship season. It's been awesome for me because, again, I'm continuing to learn. I'm hearing more new things for me, having come from the Dodgers with great tradition and history on player development and in scouting. It's just been fun to kind of, you know, put all of these things together for me.
John, you go back to your playing days. Mm-hmm. When did you – I mean, some guys know what they want to do after the game is over. Uh-huh. But while you were playing, did you have any idea that you might be wanting to do what you're doing right now?
You know, I guess it probably came when I got released. It was like, you know, I knew I wanted to be involved in the game.
Yeah.
This is my passion and my blood. And I took the kind of the SW theory, you know, some will make it, some won't make it, and so what? And you have to be strong enough to understand if you are that so what do you do and how do you get back on path? And so for myself, as I was playing, and when I came to the end, it was like, okay, so what are you going to do now? Went back to school and just really finished up my degree, and got a phone call from John Young, who started the RBI program in LA. He had lost one of his coaches and asked if I would go out and help him out. And I went out and picked up a team, actually, and started coaching this, you know, 15-year-old team. Made it to the playoffs, got to the final. So that was kind of cool in itself. It was my first time actually coaching some kids after playing. And he asked me to put on a tryout camp. And I was like, huh, what is this all about? So he kind of walked me through the process of the types of players he wanted to come to this tryout camp. So I went around the inner city of Los Angeles, got together about 50 kids. Some of the kids were already in the program. And I started going around to Crenshaw High School, to Dorsey High School, just trying to find kids who are playing football, basketball. Say, come out here on the weekends. Let me see if I can work with you, help you get yourself recognized and possibly drafted. And they were like, what are you talking about? So educating them on the game. So all of a sudden, I become an ambassador to the game. And so it was just really, you know, started to kind of, you know, get the wheels turning a little bit and intrigue my mind. And we put on this tryout camp. We get about 14 kids placed in colleges and junior colleges, as well as 6 kids drafted. And I was like, whoa, this is kind of cool. Well, at this time, the Florida Marlins were coming into existence, and Gary Hughes was a scouting director for the Marlins, extended me a scouting position, and I didn't really know what he meant. And you know, these guys were all at this showcase or workout. It was called the workout or tryout camp at that time. He offered me a position. I was like, to do what? You know, he's like, I want you to go out and scout the inner city for me. I was like, all right, cool, no problem. I was working for Naked Juice at the time as a customer service manager.
Pardon me?
I was working for Naked Juice at the time to finish up my degree. And
I think we should change the name of the podcast to Naked Juice.
Exactly right. So, you know, work for Naked Juice. I'm getting off work at like, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm running back in the inner city to try and see these kids and write some reports. I'd never really written up any reports, and so I asked to get some help from the office on the Major League Scouting Bureau that would send out some reports. And so I kind of got the wording and the verbiage of it, and I started going out and seeing these kids and stacking them. And I knocked out my inner city portion of it in about 2.5 weeks, and I said, hey, do you mind if I go out and see some of these other kids? So Gary gave me the okay. Next thing you know, I'm at USC, I'm at UCLA, I'm just traveling all over the city to see the better players in California.
And some pretty good players.
And there were some really good players at the time. And, I've turned in my little pref list, and I'm feeling excited. I didn't know what the heck I was doing, but I turned it in, and I hit the first 24 out of 24. I was like, I think I understand what this is about. As far as slotting them, and they went basically where I'd projected.
Now, so, when you do that, do other people notice?
I don't know if they were at the time. I didn't know if they were paying attention or not. Right. But, you know, not even the year hadn't completed. Gary asked me if I would be, would consider a full-time job. And I was making pretty good money. I was doing a little, you know, side commercial stuff. You know, I was living in L.A. I wanted to be somebody. So I was doing my commercials, working at Naked Juice and a part-time scout. And I took a pay cut. I took like about a $30,000 pay cut to go be a full-time scout with the Florida Marlins there. And I had Oklahoma, Arkansas, Kansas, and Missouri. And so that was the beginning of the journey of, you know, getting into professional baseball, you know, after playing and, you know, transitioning onto the other side. So
you first of all, that's an amazing way to learn while you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's clear that you back in during that period, you were the boots on the ground guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it always comes down to one guy who's there and sees the kid play.
Mm-hmm.
To what extent are you still that guy now? When you go to the Dominican or Costa Rica or wherever you're going.
Yeah, well, I feel like, you know, we have guys that are doing that, you know, that are identifying the players. And my job now is really come in and assess what they've seen and talk to them about the player and what, you know, what information they have and really trying to put the whole picture together. So I will get down and see as much as I can because I want to have as much information as I can on that player, get to know the agents or the representatives of those players to make sure that we're getting as much information as we can on any player that we're going to make a decision on. And so I'm still out there grinding, trying to identify players and you know, players that I think have a chance to impact the organization and make us better as we move forward.
How did that process work in your case with Yasmani Tomas? Can you kind of walk us through, hey, this is a guy we need to be in on. It's kind of was there for a while, and now here he is going to be introduced hopefully soon here at Salt River Field.
Well, you know, having watched him in the WBC and watched this, you know, some of the international stuff when I was working over at that other club, you get a chance to see these kids, and you get a chance to see a lot of video on these guys, and you kind of get the scuttlebutt and stories. And when you run across them, you start looking at the tool set and the skills. And you look at all the free agents that are out there and you know, the trades that you may try to make. When you start talking about a player like Yasmani, who's 24 years of age, with, you know, I'd say above average power and chance to be a solid average major league hitter. He's already an average defender for me if you put him in the outfield, but has a chance to be average at third base. So you start thinking about different ways to make a player fit into your organization and not cost you a lot in player. So if you're able to acquire power, right-handed power, which is so hard to find in today's market, especially with the new collective bargaining agreement. Whenever you're able to find true raw power that's going to impact an organization and its lineup, you have to, you know, pursue that guy. And I just thought he would be a tremendous fit here behind Goldie, or to assist Goldie as we continue to build this thing out. So you go down and you see him. My first time seeing him, I couldn't wait to get back to my hotel room so I could send a report back to Tony and Stu and Derek and be like, hey, man, you guys really need to – someone needs to get another, you know, get on a plane to come down here too. What I'm seeing, because the power was immense.
What did you see? What did you see?
I saw, you know, a guy who had easy power. It was effortless from foul pole to foul pole, and the demeanor and the way he carried himself. And having seen him in the past with his team in the WBC, this guy was a leader. He was a great teammate. You know, he was like the first guy off the bench when a run scored. So you saw some of the little intangible pieces that you thought would fit with the makeup and the character of what we're trying to put together here. And so it was like, you know, after the workout itself, and, you know, he went on the outfield and he threw for us, and he comes in, he goes, hey, can I take some ground balls at third? I'm like, huh? Oh yeah, go over there. Let's see what it looks like at third base. So he goes over third base. He's having fun with the workout itself. And it's like, he finished taking the ground balls there. Then another kid hit. Well, he goes out and he starts shagging balls in the outfield. Here's a guy who's
likes
on
the
market. Yeah. He wants to be on the field. She like, man, you know, I really think this guy may have something special that will fit for us. And I just kind of, you know, ran the flag up and got the started rallying the troops to come down and let's get on this cat and see if we can, you know, sneak in and get this guy into organization.
What do you like about below the major league level? I mean, what you're going to be watching on the minor league level, the organization itself. Obviously, you could see it from far away, not far away, the left coast, Los Angeles, when you were with the
Naked
Dodgers.
Naked Juice.
Yeah, yeah. But
that's what we're going to call that other team in blue now.
That's exactly right.
We got a three-game series against Naked Juice this week.
But what do you like about what you know about this organization right now?
Well, it's really, for me, you know, getting to know some of the players and, you know, having seen them, with that other club, Naked Juice, you know, we matched up in the Pioneer League, we matched up in the Midwest League, we matched up in the California League, we matched up in the Southern League, we matched up in the PCL. So our paths have crossed quite a bit. So I do have some history on the players that are on the field. But the biggest thing for me is getting to know the coaches, because they are going to have a really close feel for who these young men are.
And that's changed some, too.
It's you know, it's so important to know, you know, who they are and how they go about their business and what makes them click and tick. And what I don't think the public really understands is how much time, you know, these coaches spend with these kids. They're spending more time with these young players than they do with their own families. Because, I mean, we're talking about 6.5 to 7 months with these guys every single day. There's not like where there's a – you know, we do have an all-star break, but goodness, they're right back at this thing after 3 days. So, you know, to get to know the coaching staff and know the individual players, because it's so important, I think, in today's game that we understand who they are and how they tick and how they, you know, how they think. Because we're in an era where these kids want to know why. Where before, when I played, or even when Tony and Stu were coming, you know, if the coach told you to do something, you just did it. You know what I mean? Now we have to explain, and you have to have some rationale behind what we're doing. So getting to know players and getting to know staff, I think, is so important. We're in a people business. And if you don't know the people you're working with to try and get to know these players, how are we going to know what buttons to push? And, you know, how are we going to know what's going on with this guy? When you see a player's, you know, skill or talent start to go down, well, what's causing that? You know, he didn't forget how to play. He didn't forget how to hit. But there could be something personal going on. So if we don't have someone that's close enough or have a pulse on the situation, how will we know that the girlfriend left or someone's, you know, it could be a sickness in the family or an illness that he doesn't want to share with everyone else. But yet, if we get some insight, we can possibly, you know, try and help it and get them back on track sooner.
And I think one thing we should point out, too, is for the fans who don't know it, a minor league staff, coaching staff, is half the size of a major league coaching staff.
Yes, sir.
So, I mean, there's a lot more hands-on. And not necessarily, but you know what I'm saying? You've got three, whereas you've got six on the major league level.
Exactly right. We're actually trying to go to four coaches at every level this year so we can add a little more, you know, I guess an extra set of eyes and ears and hands to help with the workload with these young players and again, try and accelerate that learning curve. So it's been awesome. I mean, Derek has been unbelievable. Ken Kendrick has been very supportive of some of the ideas and thoughts that we brought into the organization. And Mike Bell and I were actually discussing this yesterday about possibly doing a young guns camp where we bring in our young starters, you know, bring them in January, last week of January, prior to reporting to spring training, to see where they are in the offseason and what they've done. Because, again, when this draft comes, these kids are going to be – they'll play their short season, then they go home for the winter, and they're not really sure how to prepare for a full season. And it's so different than what they've been, you know, accustomed to in the past. So this will allow us to have these guys at least in-house for a week to get our hands on them, if there's any little tweaks we want to make prior to them getting to spring training when everything turns up a notch because they're fighting to make a club, it's a little more relaxing to make any adjustments that you want to make with these guys.
Did your ears perk up a little bit when Randy Johnson said what he said about going down?
That was pretty cool, man. Yeah, when I saw that in one of the interviews, that he was going to come down and spend some time with the kids. I mean, come on, he's talking about a Hall of Famer, just electric stuff. And from the left side, and, if anything he can hand off or pass down to our kids about the mindset, because it really is – I mean, most of these kids are talented. They have tools. But there's a separator there, and that mind plays such a big part in how they go out and compete and what's inside their chest. And I think you can share some of that information with these guys. So it'll be really cool to have them walking around and working with their kids in spring training.
We asked you about Tomas. I know it's not official yet. The physical is still pending, but I've seen Dave Stewart comment on this publicly. Sure. So if you can, just give us a general idea of Yoan Lopez.
Good-looking, young starting pitcher. I think he has tremendous upside. And again, I hope I'm not stepping in front of myself here as we're waiting on this physical return. Yeah. But the young man is 6'4", 200 pounds, and it's high three-quarter slot. It's downhill, 90 to 96.
See, you've got the – he's got the gleam. the old Marty Schottenheimer, he's got the gleam. I've seen that look in your face talking about a few different kids over the course of this winter.
It's
you've
so
got
fun.
It right now.
It's so fun when you see a player on the open market that can do the things that he's doing. So, it's not like this is his first bullpen he's thrown. I mean, this guy's competed against other players where they're pretty talented. And I mean, if you go on YouTube, you can see him facing Yasmani. You'll see him facing Oliveras. You'll see him facing, Yasiel and punching these guys out. And you're like, wait a minute. Okay, let's go back. And then you see him in a little workout situation with these kids from the DR. And the look in the player's eye when he's on the mound and competing, it's like, oh, my goodness. Okay, this could be fun. So let's kind of see this thing kind of play itself out. But again, he's he flashed a solid average to maybe above average slider. I thought it was an average curveball and a feel for a changeup. So wherever this young man finishes up and when it's all said and done, when he gets here, I think you guys will enjoy what you see.
Ken, I know it's a very complicated process, and I tried somewhat successfully, I was told,
he was
earlier
pretty good at it.
In the show to explain how spending the reported $8.25 million to get Lopez mm-hmm. hamstrings the organization a little bit over the next two international signing periods. Can you give us an idea? And it's really complex, but how that works and why you guys felt it was necessary to go all in on this one guy right now.
Well, I think it's important, when we're talking about identifying talent that can impact your big league club. Whether he impacts in 15 or in 16, we have a quality, a high-end guy, a chance to be a two or three starter for the organization. Now, the thing about that, this guy, you're going to have him under control for the next 7 years. It's not like he's a one and done. You have him for the next 7 years under control. And when you have a chance to get someone who's, again, going to impact your rotation, that guy's expensive out on the open market, as we're watching some of these numbers go off the board now for these starters. So, with that being said, looking at what I've seen thus far of the 15 players in Dominican as well as in Venezuela and seeing what's going to be coming out for the 16 because they're already playing down there, you get a chance to see some of the 16s.
So you know what's coming in these future classes.
I've seen the 16 class, at least from the Dominican. I've seen the 16 class and a few of the guys from Venezuela. I have not seen the players that are being showcased right now in Nicaragua. That's going on right now. They just had a showcase in Colombia that we had two guys at. So and that, again, was just okay. It wasn't anything that was like, ooh, hey, D, you need to get over and see it. So I feel pretty good about where we are and how we're going to attack it. And if you look at the history of the signing bonuses and the kids that are coming from Latin America's, I think if you look at the current players that are in the big leagues now, look at what they signed for, it's going to be in the same range of what we're going to have available to us. Now, we still have our dollars that we can spend or we can trade. We have flexibility here.
Right.
So there are things that we can do. Now, if you look at some of these kids who are signing for $50,000, they go on and have tremendous careers in the big leagues. You see guys who sign for $200,000 and $300,000 have tremendous careers in the big leagues. There are some kids whose talent is a little more advanced, so it may force you to run the price up a little bit higher. But I do feel like we can still be competitive in that market and in international market, whether it be Dominican, Venezuela, Australia, Asia. I think we're going to still be aggressive and pursue the best players that we can find.
So the rule was, and I'm probably going to screw this up, so please correct me, that you can only spend up to $300,000 now over the next two signing periods on any one player.
That is correct.
But you still are allocated just about close to the most money because of the previous
record.
That
is correct.
So, okay, so we're good there.
Right.
So now you can also trade some of that money or the slot. How does that work?
Well, it really depends on the club and how the slotting works with the dollars. But if you wanted to make a trade with me and you wanted to trade me for some of my international dollars, we could negotiate. If I wanted to send them $2 million for player X, we could do those types of things with our international pool money.
If the other team is trying to go.
Exactly right.
Yeah. So it's an asset. It's currency.
It's sure. It's definitely currency.
Well, that's, I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah. Huh? I feel good about where we are.
I was just going to say, I think with the moves that have been made and getting a lot of young talent, we build up that minor league organization again.
It's getting strong, man. Yeah. You know, that double-A rotation has a chance to be really strong. Not saying who's going to make a double-A right. club, but looking at the names on the board, I am so excited that spring training is right around the corner. I can't wait to see some of these guys. And, again, if we have that winter development or the young guns camp,
sure.
You get a chance to see these guys here. They'll be walking out. I mean, we have great weather here in Arizona, and it's an opportunity for us to get out here and see our players and have our fan base come out and watch our guys work out.
I think that'd be great.
And we could just, you know, string some area off, let them come out and watch these guys run, throw, play a little catch, throw some bullpens, get a chance to interact. If we have season ticket holders that want to be host families while these guys are here, I just think there's so many different things that we could play off of here to with our kids to get them comfortable with being at the major league level, which is so hard. Again, when these guys get these phone calls that come to the big leagues, I mean, it is, you know, that heart goes right up to their throat. You know, they have to call their parents, their girlfriend, and we're trying to keep it off Twitter so we can make our announcement up here.
Yeah.
And then when they get here, it's like, oh, man, where do I go? Well, you know, have them here. We can show them where the team hotel is. We can, you know, show them how to drive themselves to the ballpark, how to get into the ballpark, where the locker rooms are, what happens at the major league level with our major league training staff, you know. And those are some of the things that we can give these guys, along with, you know, our PR training, our housing situations here. There's so many lessons that we can teach them in a short period of time. That, again, get them to be introduced to the community, visit some hospitals, talk to some kids at schools. There are just so many positives.
Make an impression.
Yeah, man. That's what we're trying to do here. And, again, continue to grow and cultivate our fan base and introduce these young players that will be coming up here to impact our big league club.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you this one last thing, because we talked about it earlier in the show, and Dave Stewart talked about this publicly this week, about the catching situation.
Yes.
And the idea that Dave said, we're going to go with what we have here, mm-hmm. and that's Tuffy, and that's Oscar Hernandez, mm-hmm. the Rule 5 kid. But the equation seemed to change a little bit with what the organization has seen from Peter O'Brien.
Right.
And I was at some Fall League games with you watching Peter O'Brien. Tell us where Peter O'Brien is in terms of his progression and close to being a major league ready catcher.
Well, he's getting there. You know, he's been working his tail off with Shule. You know, they've been, Sherlock and him have been inseparable from the Arizona Fall League, even here early. I want to say the kid got here on January 2nd, and he's been working out every single day. Him and Sherles have been together. His receiving has improved. Excuse me, and his hands are getting better. I think the biggest thing for us is really understanding where he is with his game calling and handling balls outside of his knees as far as the blocking left and right. And as he gets that and gets more comfortable with it, I think you're going to be surprised that, you know, he's going to be able to come up here and hold his own. I think offensively, especially against left-handed pitching, he's going to do a little damage. He's got some strength in his swing. He's going to drive some baseballs. But, the, you know, getting back to the catching portion of it, it's so imperative that the fingers are good and the hands are soft when he's handling big league pitching.
Is the only way to learn that talking to him? You can watch him catch.
Play. Yeah, we have to get, you know, yeah. You have to get the innings. You have to get the reps, and he's got to get familiar with the names and the pitchers, and again, doing the homework, getting there and studying and looking at game plans and how we're going to stick to plan with that pitcher's strength. How we're going to get him to get to his pitch, to get that guy out, and understanding those things. So, a lot of it is going to be communication and recall, and again, growing the young player into becoming a big league everyday regular.
Got a lot of talent in the system. One last thing I saw, and I'm going out on a limb here because I want to make sure this is correct, but
sure.
I'm trusting Peter Gammons on this because he tweeted it out, and I think you probably know where I'm going here. Your dad, mm-hmm. Johnny Guitar Watson?
That is correct.
A legendary blues and funk musician, Gub.
Yes, sir.
I love blues. I did not know
that. He was a
that.
Blues guy and a funk man. He
gangster
was a really
of
good
love.
That is true.
Peter Gammons tweeted out a video of DeJean's dad, Johnny Guitar Watson, playing Gangster of Love, which is on YouTube, right? If you want to search on YouTube,
exactly,
type
right.
it in.
That's pretty cool.
Now, are you musical at all? Or?
You know, I play a little piano around the house.
Sing in the shower, right?
That's definitely sing in the shower. Play a little piano in the house. Play some drums. I did audition for the LA Symphonic Orchestra
really?
When I was 11.
Whoa, really?
On percussion. So, yeah, play a little music, you know. Just
how'd the audition go?
Not very good because I didn't make it. But it was fun nevertheless.
Well, I think you'll agree you made the right choice.
I definitely agree I made the right choice. This has been an unbelievable journey and having a great time here with these guys.
Well, let's see. Young Guns Camp and Naked Juice.
Hey, now.
We're ready.
That's what I'm talking about.
People around here are excited.
It
just feels different, and it feels, boy, you know what? Something's happening here.
Yeah.
And I think it's really
fun. It's
going
to be fun.
It is.
Watch the progression.
It's going to be nice. I'm telling you. Yeah. I think, you know, again, health being key. If these guys are able to stay healthy, we're going to be extremely competitive. And you know, with the young guys like Ruby and Webby, you know.
Those are your guys, too.
I saw those cats and, you know, watched them grow and mature.
From the Dodgers.
Yeah. And again, you know, CA had, I mean, Anderson had a great year last year. Let's not forget, he led a team in wins. Right. So, I mean, he's going to be okay. You know, you got Addison Reed in the back end of that bullpen, you know, throwing fire. And so if the guys come back healthy, that would have been down. I think we're going to – we may sneak up and you know, surprise some folks. So I'm excited about where we are and how we're going about it. I think the leadership in the dugout is going to be important to how we do it. And getting these young guys to understand where they go and how they're going to get there with the assistance of Dunk and Tony. And, you know, you have Stu. I mean, this guy's – how many 20-game seasons did he have? So we can always go down and talk to our pitchers as well. And I think Harkey's going to do a tremendous job, man. For me personally, I'm fired up, as you can see. I get excited when we start talking shop, but it's time to go, man. I'm ready to roll.
It's close. As Dave Stewart said on this show, teams won't see us coming.
Yeah. Hello.
I like that.
That's good.
Sir, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it,
Steve. Thank you.
Take me out to the ball game.
Let's see what else is happening in the majors these days.
I don't believe what I just saw.
Time to go around the league.
Well, before we get to the news from elsewhere around the major leagues, we have breaking podcast news, Gub.
Oh.
We are here at Fantasy Camp, and Mark Grace is a Fantasy Camp coach and manager. He's actually in a meeting now with, I don't want to say the real staff, but he's in there with Chip Hale and all
the
those guys.
Staff.
The real staff.
That's an important
meeting. On Diamondback business. So we've got a terrific guy to come up and talk to us about Fantasy Camp in a few minutes. Former D-back great David DeLucci. The pride of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, will be here, and we'll have David as a guest later in this podcast.
If Gracie has to be replaced, I can't think of a better person to replace him than David DeLucci. It'll be fun.
He's holed up in Chip Hale's office right now with Tony and everybody.
Yeah,
we'll get
Gracie at a later time.
We'll get Gracie later. So David DeLucci a little later in the show. Look forward to that. Right now we want to talk about what else has been going on in a fairly newsworthy week here in the National League West. And nothing is going on in Colorado. and that's sort of where we start with this segment of the show. I thought this was interesting because, Gub, over the weekend I read the Denver Post, and Patrick Saunders is a columnist there, and he wrote this about the Rockies. The club's lack of activity during the offseason has done nothing to bolster the mood of Rockies Nation. Fans are restless and becoming increasingly negative. Now, they have a new GM in Colorado, Jeff Breidich, and he has admitted that he fought the urge to come into this new job and make a big splash, make some headlines, big deal, blow the whole thing up, all that.
Which they did in San Diego.
Correct. But Breidich said he didn't want to panic, didn't want to make a deal just for its own sake. He's being patient. But they've been very quiet. They haven't done anything, especially for a team that lost 96 games last year. They signed Daniel Descalso, the former Cardinal, who gives them some depth and versatility, sure. And they gave Nick Hundley, the catcher, used to play for the Padres, was an Oriole. They gave Nick Hundley a two-year deal, $6.5 million. And they lost Michael Kadire to the Mets. He got $21 million for 2 years. So they're minus Kadire. They add Hundley and Descalso. Other than that, they're the same team. And you have to wonder why, because it's not working there right now.
They deal with the every-year injuries to Troy Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez. They have a player who's a great hitter. I like the kid as a hitter. Has difficulty behind the plate. That's why they want to get Nick Hundley.
William Rosario.
Yeah. They can't move him. He's not going to play first base.
They have Morneau there.
He may have to play some first base against some left-handed pitching just to get a look-see. I mean,
Justin Morneau almost won a batting title last season.
I know, but what I'm saying is
the idea that you're going to sit him to play Rosario seems crazy.
Then why do they have Rosario on the ball club?
That's
a lot of offense.
Especially after they signed Hundley.
Exactly. Yeah, Hundley's going to be their everyday catcher.
That's why I thought this would be interesting, because there are no clear answers here. Now, there was a story last week in the New York Post that a Troy Tulowitzki trade to the Mets was likely dead, and that the Mets are going to stick with Wilmer Flores at shortstop. The Post story quoted Mets GM Sandy Alderson talking about a Tulo trade. We've continued to have conversations. Nothing is likely to occur. There is currently nothing imminent. I believe at this point we will go into spring training with what we have at shortstop. So the Tulo to the Mets thing, which seems like it's been going on for more than a year now, appears, and we'll underscore that word, appears to be dead. Now, Tulo coming off hip surgery that ended his season last year, they still owe him $118 million, and he has not shown that he can stay healthy enough at that altitude, which I think is a big deal, to be an everyday player for them.
Cargo's kind of in the same boat.
Yeah.
A lot of money, guy who gets hurt every year. I mean, if you're another ball club, you're talking to the Rockies about Tulowitzki or Carlos Gonzalez, you have to be very cautious. what you almost have to do is to have the Rockies take on the entire salary.
Well, to move Tulo, they're going to have to take on, I would believe, a large portion of it. Yeah.
A lot.
You know, it was reported they were in significant trade discussions with the Rangers about sending Willene Rosario to Texas. Maybe that happens. It hasn't yet. We'll see. But
he needs to go where he can DH.
Yes, he needs to go to an American League team. But they'll have De La Rosa, Chacin, Lyles, Matzik, Butler in their rotation, same as they had last year, all guys who are either young and unproven or older and injury-prone. So the rotation is the same. The lineup's the same, minus Kadire. So you got to wonder, well, you lost 96 last year. What's going on?
Yeah, I like some of the young kids. Blackman had a good year, although he tapered off at the end.
Yes,
Dickerson, I think, is they like him a lot.
I'm a big Corey Dickerson guy
myself. Yeah, they're not real sold on him yet defensively, and we've seen him have some problems defensively.
Charlie Blackman looked like Joe DiMaggio in April.
He had a six-hit game against the Diamondbacks.
As you mentioned, had a tough second half.
And, the one guy I like on their staff, the pitching staff, but he's had a tendency to get hurt since coming over from the Angels, Tyler Chatwood. Yep. He's got some good stuff, and when he's healthy – the Rockies are a lot like a lot of other ball clubs. You know, they have some injuries they have to deal with. But the two that are ongoing every year now are Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez. And they're their best players.
It looks like, sitting here a month away from pitchers and catchers, that they're going to take, much like the Phillies did the last couple of years, one last shot, or perhaps two, with what they currently have, which is the Cargo Tulo team.
It's not going to get it done.
And there's no evidence that, as you said, there's no evidence that that'll get it done. Padres brought Josh Johnson back on a one-year deal.
Yeah, probably
one-year deal, $1 million. It can get to just over $7 million with incentives. He's coming off a second Tommy John surgery.
He was really good when he was healthy. But, coming off too.
He was in Florida as a Florida Marlin.
He was really good.
Amazing. Former Padre and Mariner Chris DeNorfia signs with the Cubs. And how about this? The Tampa Bay Rays, they're just blowing that thing.
They're blowing it up. Name six Tampa Bay Rays.
Ben Zobrist and Yunel Escobar to Oakland for John Jaso and two prospects. So the Billy Bean transformation of the Oakland A's continues. They get Zobrist and Escobar. Interesting thing about that with the A's here, and everyone's going, what is Billy Bean doing? Well, first of all, Billy Bean usually ends up being right.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have to have patience there. They took a shot with John Lester last summer. And they had a lead late in the wild card game. Didn't work out. So you knew Lester was going to go and get the big money somewhere else. He's now a Cub. So that was hardly a surprise. But now, go back to midseason last year. Oakland had a really, really good team.
They were rolling.
Top five in baseball for a couple of years there. So midseason last year, they trade Cespedes. They've traded Donaldson, Samardzija, Derek Norris, the catcher, Jaso, Brandon Moss. And they've also dealt their two outstanding shortstop prospects, Addison Russell, and now in this latest Zobrist deal, Daniel Robertson, who we saw a lot of here in the Fall League. So, I always say, give Billy Bean time. He knows what he's doing. But to trade all those guys and the top two shortstop prospects, this is kind of next level, Billy Bean.
And I know their manager, Bob Melvin, he'll get it done. I mean, with what he's been given on that. It's still a good ball club. The ironic thing is the trade – Lester's now gone from Oakland. Cespedes now gone from Boston. Other teams.
It's amazing how things work out. Isn't it? Hey, let's get sabermetric. What do you say?
Well, let me tell you something, brother.
We're ready to smack you over the head with some serious analytics.
Thermodynamics, hypermathematics.
Like a wrestler with a folding chair.
Lay it the smack it down.
It's go time for Sabermetric Smackdown.
Sabermetric Smackdown, if you find baseball's new math confusing, intimidating, or just annoying, Leo, this is the segment for you.
I find it annoying or I am annoying.
Well,
either
see
or.
All of the above. Each week we break down one sabermetric idea, try to make it digestible and useful for you this season. Key here, as always, if you embrace the concepts and the ideas, then the numbers start to make sense. Now, last week we started with perhaps the most basic category out there, WHIP, which is walks plus hits divided by innings pitched. And we talked about why WHIP is a better measurement of a pitcher's performance than ERA. And to listen to that discussion, check out episode 4. On this show, we're going to take the WHIP idea, brace yourselves, one step further. We're going next level here. And use a more complex stat in terms of the formula, but one that's also very easy to understand and use. And I see that look in your eye. I know you're not on board
yet.
You've
already lost it.
I know. Today we are talking FIP.
FIP.
FIP. We've went from whip to FIP, which stands for...
Catchy titles. I'm with you so far.
Fielding Independent Pitching. And here's the basic idea behind the number. And again, think about the concepts and then worry about the numbers. What are we trying to achieve here? FIP.
What are we trying to achieve here?
You mean with the podcast or just the segment? FIP attempts to measure a pitcher's performance based only on the things he can control. A pitcher, if you think about it, can really only control home runs, hit batters, walks, and strikeouts. So FIP eliminates those things the pitcher can control, like the defenders behind him, or whether a batted ball drops in for a hit or goes for an out. FIP isolates the pitcher and gives you a better idea of how well he actually pitched. The pitcher throws, the ball gets hit. From there, if a ball lands safely for a hit or gets turned into an out by the defense, is for the most part out of the pitcher's hands. So FIP filters that out. It's in the title, Fielding Independent Pitching. Are you with me? You buying this?
He's wavering, but I'm
where are you?
I'm fine.
Now, FIP, let me try and get you with this now. FIP is very easy to use. This is a great thing about FIP. It's designed to look just like ERA. It's built on an ERA equivalent. So if you're asking, as always, as you should, what's a good FIP? Well, that's easy. A good FIP looks just like a good ERA. It's built on the same scale. So it's easy to understand. Now, last week we mentioned how WHIP is mainstream. We use it in our Diamondbacks TV broadcast. You'll find WHIP on the stats page at MLB.com. FIP isn't there yet. But you can find FIP at Fangraphs.com, BaseballReference.com. And because the league average FIP varies year to year to match league average ERA, FIP and ERA leaders are kind of very similar every year, which helps the numbers context. FIP leaders last year in each league, two Cy Young winners, Clayton Kershaw and Corey Kluber. Kershaw last year, a 1.77 ERA, a 1.81 FIP. Kluber, 2.44 ERA, slightly better FIP at 2.35. So that's the basic idea. It tells you, taking out the defense, fielding independent pitching, how well the guy pitched. Your thoughts?
I think I understand it. I mean, it's basic, right? So I understand it. I'm just curious as to, you know, how you factor in where your fielders are positioned. Are you pitching to how they're positioned?
Yeah, right. But I agree. There are factors that influence the numbers, your point.
Yes.
Yes, I agree. Now, for the Diamondbacks, best FIP on the ball club last year. Want to take a guess?
We just go
pitch starter or reliever, any pitcher.
I know my guess.
Who is it?
What do you got?
I'm going Randall Delgado.
Incorrect, as usual.
Because you had given a clue earlier about Delgado.
I set you up.
Was it set me up for failure?
Was it Coleman?
Evan Marshall.
Good guess, I can see that.
Evan Marshall, a 2.89 FIP. Now, FIP, because it isolates a pitcher's performance and filters out the things he can't control, can be a very good indicator of future performance. It's better than ERA as a predictive metric. So this is where Randall Delgado, comes in. This was interesting. Last year, Randall Delgado, 47 appearances, only 4 starts, pitched to an ERA of 4.87. But his fielding independent pitching number, his FIP, was 3.39. So... If Randall Delgado, it's a lot. If Randall Delgado had a 3.39 ERA, we'd say he had a pretty good year.
Yeah.
That's where FIP says, hey, this guy might have, you know, had some bad luck, had some tough defense behind him, and actually pitched better than his ERA indicates. And that's where you go to FIP. It's a better or more true indicator of how he pitched.
You know, just looking at Randall's season, and he had a couple of tough ball games, but I thought he pitched better than his numbers, his ERA indicated.
I agree. Generally, a pitcher with a FIP lower than his ERA, and in Randall's case, significantly lower,
right,
will go on to have a better ERA in the future. So if you look to FIP, I wonder what kind, especially for fantasy league guys out there, I wonder what kind of a year Randall Delgado is going to have in 2015. Well, according to his FIP, he might be pretty good.
Hey, you know, he's getting to that age now. He's been up for a few years. He's got potential. He could be a starter. He could be a long man. He could be a short man of the bullpen. So he says, you know, this might be the year where he turns things around.
All right. I turn to you.
FIP.
FIP, yes or no?
I don't think that one's going to become part of my everyday.
I'll pay a little bit more attention to it.
Fielding independent pitching. FIP, it's easy to use and understand, built on the same scale as ERA, but instead of earned run average, FIP again measures only the things a pitcher can really control. The home runs, the walks, the hit batters, and strikeouts. So try FIP for a better idea of how a pitcher actually pitched.
Governor!
Now, the man who's seen it all.
Now we got the ball, and this is a bat.
The D-backs play-by-play voice since our very first game, and then some.
Now look at, I say look at here!
It's this week's edition of Hey, Governor!
One of baseball's rarities is hitting for the cycle. The Miami Marlins, dating back to the mid-90s, have yet to have a player hit for the cycle. Heck, the San Diego Padres date back to the 60s. They've yet to have a player achieve the rare feat. In fact, the Padres are still the only active franchise in Major League Baseball to have never had a pitcher throw a no-hitter. But let's get back to the cycle. A cycle is when a hitter gets a single, double, triple, and home run in the same game. Doesn't matter what the order is. It could be home run, double, single, triple. Only one player hit for the cycle in 2014, the Rockies' Michael Kadire. Only twice in big league history have cycles occurred on the same day. Back in the 1920s, I'll spare you the names, and in 2008 when the Diamondbacks' Stephen Drew and the Mariners' Adrian Beltre each did it on September 1st. There have been only 305 cycles in major league history, so it's about as rare as throwing a no-hitter. There have been 287 of those over the history of the game. The Diamondbacks, who have been around since 1998, have had six cycles from five different players. Most recently, Aaron Hill put his name in the record books by hitting for two cycles in one season, let alone only 11 days apart. That was back in 2012. Kelly Johnson did it in 2010. We mentioned Drew in 2008. Luis Gonzalez was the first to do it in 2000 against his former club, the Astros. So there are four of the Diamondback players hitting for five of the cycles. The sixth cycle, and probably the one player you'd never expect to hit for a cycle, was from Greg Colburn on September 18, 2002, in San Diego. Colby, as he was known, was a solid hitter, so-so defender. He caught, played first base and third base, and did not run well. He was slow, real slow. He was in the lineup at first base this particular night, against the Padres and their starter, lefty Oliver Perez. Yeah, the same Oliver Perez who now pitches out of the Diamondbacks' bullpen. Colby batted second for manager Bob Brenly that night. He singled in his first at-bat, struck out in the third, and then homered to left off Perez in the fourth inning. Against the Padres' bullpen, Colburn doubled in the sixth, homered again in the seventh. So he was 4-for-5 and a triple shy of the cycle as he came to bat in the ninth inning against Jonathan Johnson for San Diego. Now, for Colby to get a triple, something special was going to have to happen, and it did. The Padres are still playing their games at Qualcomm Stadium. They had not moved downtown yet. The bullpens were in play down the lines, and I'll be darned if Colburn doesn't hit one into the right field bullpen. It rattles around under the benches out there, and Bubba Trammell can't pick up the baseball, the right fielder. Colburn ends up at third base with his triple and the cycle and his fifth hit of the game. Oh, in case you're interested, the Diamondbacks beat the Padres on Colburn's big night 10-3, pushing their record in 2002 to 92-58.
Well, that was some Diamondback history. Let's get into a little bit more now. Do you want to, Gub, introduce our special guest?
He was one of the all-time favorite Diamondbacks, still is. Anytime he's introduced at I don't want to date you, Luch, but an old-timer game, you still get a big hand. David DeLucci, who was an original Diamondback, an expansion pick from, as I remember, the Baltimore Orioles, right?
Correct.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
You're here at the Fantasy Camp. Are you having fun with that?
I'm having a great time. I love to look for excuses to come out to Arizona and be around the Diamondbacks family, and this is just fantastic to be around men that love the game of baseball and former players, former teammates, sharing their skill and what they know is incredible. Just an incredible experience.
You're still down to Louisiana?
Yes. I'm living in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Big mama's boy, can't leave mom. She lives 5 minutes down the road.
LSU, go Tigers.
Yeah.
You know, Fantasy Camp is going on here this week, and so it's funny because we walked in to record the podcast here at Salt River Fields at Talking Stick, and there's like six games going on in all the fields. It looks like spring training is fully underway, but then you look out over in the field, and there's like a few 80-year-old guys out there running around in Diamondback purple.
Yes, and they're good. They're good players, as a matter of fact. First of all, love being in the purple. Love seeing the players in the purple. It's got a special meaning. Hits me right in the heart. I love to see it. Our campers this year were very thrilled to get to wear the purple uni. So everybody loves it. But yes, we do have some players. I must say now, since before we play the second game, because I don't know what's going to happen the second game, but we did win 19-4, and my guys, hopefully they didn't use up all their hits and runs, but we've got some guys that can swing the bat, and we have a lady that can swing the bat.
Nice.
And, you know, it's fun, and that was one of the things that I told my team was, hey, we're here to have fun. You paid a lot of money to come out here and have fun and be with the guys and camaraderie. And then the first pitch was thrown, and I'm like, let's go. You know, let's pick it up. We got to be intense. So you never lose that intensity or that will to win. And I've got a bunch of teammates or a bunch of players that are same way.
And you're wheeling these guys out there for two games a day. I imagine some of the afternoon games, the pace is a bit slower than in the morning.
I told them that, number one, don't blow it out in game one. Number two, eat in moderation and don't sit at the table for longer than 20 minutes. Get up and walk around the cafeteria because, you know, as a veteran player and some of these guys are veteran guys, you give your heart and soul and you say you're going to pace yourself until you take that swing. The ball goes in play and then they try to air it out. And the goal of the camp is to play every single game, not be one and done. So, we're good, man. Our guys, our team's very good.
Now, how many campers do we have? How many teams, coaches, and who are some of the coaches, just to give fans an idea?
I believe we have 67 campers, mm-hmm. which is awesome, which is absolutely incredible. And I think there's like 55 returning, which is great.
That's a
lot that have been here 10 years, all 10 years. They have their own team. And the coaches, there's six teams. My coach, I'm the manager, I guess, and my coach is Armando Reynoso. So we have a language barrier between the manager and the
it's
other
a problem
coach.
Right at the top.
I can't
and
translate
a practical
to the
joker
players.
Too.
Yes. but he's pitching very well. We have to pitch to our players. And I left my rotator cuff in about 1998 in left field.
Yeah.
So
one of those dives.
I'm not throwing very well, so Armando's going to throw. But we played – the first game was Mike Morgan, Andy Green. We played their team. And I think this second game today will be Swindell and Durazo. So our team name is the Deluchadors, and their team name is Team Tex-Mex. So we've got a little cross-the-border action going on today.
As I mentioned, your expansion pick, the Diamondbacks lost 97 games of that first year, 1998. But 99 through 2002, while you were here, those are special years and some really good ball clubs.
It was. And I look back at it today after Randy had been inducted and Schilling getting votes and other guys getting mentioned, and it hits me that not only were we good, but we had such good players. And I was able to play behind probably the best 1-2 pitching rotation, 1-2 combination up there in the history of the game, you know. And in 98, to come out here and be kind of like the novelty in the desert with the new age stadium, and people hated us across baseball. Yeah. I remember doing the Rome show and hearing some of the comments from other players and other teams and other fans. They did not want us to succeed.
Why?
And it was just the two expansion teams came in, and I don't think baseball wanted two more teams. And then you have a team in Tampa and you have a team in Arizona. And it just wasn't, in their mind, it wasn't old school baseball. Look at the unis. Look at the ballpark.
All the different combos of uniforms, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a Sunday hat, and we had a alternative jersey, you know. I mean, it was crazy.
If they could have changed caps in between innings, they'd have done
well,
that.
Well, Buck told me he used to have to put a mannequin up in the clubhouse and put that day's uniform on so everybody would know what color hat to wear.
Yes.
I went out spring training with the wrong uniform one time as a rookie. Number one, you want to toe the line. And I go out there and had no idea. I go out there and I'm stretching, and they let me go out there and get in line before they told me. And I've got the wrong uni from top to bottom. We had so many different combinations. It was unbelievable. But everyone was pulling against us.
Yeah.
Except for our fans. And we sold out every single game.
People come early. They'd watch the roof open. We get blown out 10-1 in that first year. They'd wait until the game was over so they could watch
the
roof close.
So they could see the roof close.
Yeah, but every single game. And then in 99, after Jerry had signed Randy, they brought in Gonzo, Tony Womack, they'd signed Finley. The hate was even there more.
Yes. Because it was almost like we were the spoiled team that got what they wanted and got what they needed. I credit our front office and our owner that he from day one, I remember him saying, we will put together a winning organization. And they did it right. I remember Mel Didier being here, and I remember Buck. Podna. We're going to get a good team on the field and off the field,
yep.
And we built around character guys. So it was one thing about the Diamondbacks was you were going to get a good guy that the community could relate to. And the popularity was there, and then we start bringing another piece of the puzzle, and they're good players and good guys. Man, our clubhouse was such a delight to be in every single day. And it translated on the field, because when you get deep in the season and guys are battling injuries, but they like each other and they play for each other, and that's when we took off, and it was no turning back.
Yeah. The national perspective on those teams, and it's more than just 2001, was that it was – Schilling and Johnson and two pitchers won the World Series. That in a lot of ways is the national narrative. But in watching some of those other teams, not just the 01 Team Cup, but I just recently watched the whole 01 World Series again. Randy got me going on that. I have the DVD set at home.
Miguel Batista was huge in that.
I mean, there were a lot of really good players on those teams. I mean, it wasn't just two pitchers. It was a lot more than that, right?
There was a guy named Greg Swindell, had a pretty decent career. Yeah. There's a guy named Mike Morgan that played for 52 years. it wasn't like we were running a whole bunch of nobodies out there.
Yeah.
We were the team that I remember our bench could have started on every other major league roster out there. And it was almost like you sit there and you ask yourself, what would you rather do? Would you rather play in the World Series as a bench guy, a utility guy, fourth outfielder, or would you rather start on another team? And that's how we were. We had Danny Bautista, we had me, we had DeRozzo, Greg Colburn. Goodness gracious, our bullpen was the same way. So that when you needed to give a guy a break, when you needed to give Finley or Gracie a break, you were bringing in a guy that could have played 162 games on another team. When you had a relief pitcher come in, Miguel Batista in the World Series was lights out. He will never get mentioned. He's just a line in the box score. But we wouldn't have won that game had he not gone in there and got the big out for the big unit to come in. So from top to bottom, it was a fantastic team. And we knew our role, and we went out there, we accepted it, and we did it as best we could.
Sitting back there in your Barca lounge, you're in Baton Rouge now the last few years. How would you describe the path that the franchise has taken to get here and where it's going from here?
I think that, like I was talking about the purple unis, and I'm a big history guy, I felt like the path kind of hit a speed bump, and I felt a little disappointed because from the outside looking in, it felt like what we were building kind of went in a different direction. And I don't know if it was intentional or not, but it was a new wave that came in here. And like I said, for us to start on the ingredient of character, and it wasn't bad guys, it just kind of went another way. And to see the color changes, and from a guy, for me personally, like Schulte said, to be here in 98 and take a beating in the public and on the field, you take pride in that because we built that up. We built the brand up from everybody thinking we were going to be the joke of the baseball. We built it to the top of the world, and then to see it kind of change direction, it kind of hurts a little bit. I think they're back on track. They got Tony here, Chip Hale. I look at the coaching staff at Turner Ward. Been around here with Andy Green. I think they're going back. I'm listening to these guys talk about character more than I've ever heard before. And I feel good when you have super players that are great leaders like Goldie and you build a team around him. I think they're going right back in that direction. And when you do it, it becomes contagious. more players with good character that can play want to come here in this organization, and I see the future being very bright.
Hey, before we let you go, let's see if I get this right. Led the National League in triples with 12 and 98?
And 98,
as a
correct.
Rookie.
Correct.
Nice
still
work.
Got it.
Nice
well
pull.
Done,
still got it.
Well done.
I know you still got the scorebook from 98,
I
too.
Do. I've got all my scorebooks yet.
Hey, we got to get you up here more often,
love
man.
Love to, man. Anytime. I'd love to. Yeah.
That was great.
I'd
thanks so much.
Thanks for having
thanks,
me.
David.
Yes,
David
DeLucci. Always
thank
good.
You. Thank you.
Everybody.
And, man, that does it for Episode 5. How about that?
It's always fun. It goes fast.
It really does.
Hopefully, when you listen, it goes by.
And nice pinch hitter in David DeLucci.
Boy, he was terrific.
Yeah. Manage the location switch well enough.
Yeah,
so
we're here in a conference room and overlooking the ballpark, which
I'm
is
really
the blue sky.
Now.
I mean, this is hard to beat
I'm
right
ready
here.
To go.
Yeah, this is about the point in the year where you're like, all right, enough already. Let's go. We want to thank our guest today, Diamondback Senior VP of Baseball Operations to John Watson and David DeLucci, who's busy coaching his managing his team here at Fantasy Camp. We will be back next week with a brand new episode 6 of D-backs podcast. Although I should say, Leo, that some of us will be back next week.
Yeah, well, you know, we couldn't.
Magnum PI here is going to miss a couple of weeks for a Hawaiian vacation. You and Nancy are going to be at the islands, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm not quite ready for baseball yet, but I'm getting close.
Yeah, which is all good, except we're going to miss out on
Hey Gubna.
Well, they'll be making more exciting when I get back.
It's true. But if you see him in Hawaii.
I'll take over a couple of my
if you see him in Hawaii, just shout out Hey Gubna.
Yeah, he'll give you one on the beach. Yeah.
Remember, single-game tickets for Diamondback spring training games right here at Salt River Field's A Talking Stick. Just went on sale last Saturday. I was here Saturday. And we had a long line at the ticket window, and tickets went on sale at 10 in the morning. I was here for Jacoby Ellsbury baseball camp. And, boy, what a terrific guy he is with the native kids. I mean, he could not be more generous with his time or his attention. But we had a big, long line out buying tickets. So you have to move fast before all the tickets are gone. They go quick. dbacks.com/spring for a complete spring training schedule. Best time to become a Diamondback season ticket holder is right now. You get access to the best seats at the lowest prices. And we have all kinds of flexible payment plans and options that will fit your schedule. You can pick a weekend season ticket plan. You could do the half-season plan or be with us all year at Chase Field for the full-season plan. dbacks.com/tickets has all your info. Remember also, cancel your Hawaiian vacations. Save the date February 22. That's a Sunday.
I'll be back.
You'll be back by then?
He's trying to get us to do FanFest in Hawaii, which I think we were all on board
for. Yeah, how'd that go? That didn't work out?
They're doing the Pro Bowl over here, so I thought we'd move FanFest over there.
I like your thinking there, though. 11th annual Subway D-backs FanFest at Chase Field, noon to 4, Sunday, February 22nd. Unprecedented access for the fans to Diamondback players, coaches, alumni, even, yes, the broadcasters will all be there. So wear something nice. Autograph and photo sessions, the whole thing, D-backs. FanFest is Sunday, February 22, noon to 4. Follow the Diamondbacks on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can also become an official Diamondbacks Insider subscriber. Get special pre-sale opportunities for spring training and regular season, plus discount opportunities for Diamondbacks tickets and merchandise online. Check out dbacks.com/insider. Don't forget to follow this show on the Twitter at dbacks podcast. We'll have links to this and all our shows, as well as news about upcoming guests. You can download the show, of course, for free at no cost to you, the listener, at dbacks.com and iTunes. For Leo Gilmartin and the Gubna, Greg Schulte, I'm Steve Berthume. Thanks for listening and downloading. We will talk to you next week. And next week, we will be, guys, only 1 month away from pitchers and catchers' first workout.
That sounds
right
so good.
Here at Salt River Field. So long, everybody.
This has been another edition of D-backs Podcast.
The game is over. The Diamondbacks have got to win here.
Thanks for listening.
It's over. Go home.
We'll see you soon at Chase Field for more D-backs Baseball.